On this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, we will break down everything that you need to know about one of rock's greatest debut albums of all time, Core by Stone Temple Pilots, reminded us of our love for the great classic rock of the late 60s and early 70s during a time when the world seemed to be taken over by the grunge movement. If you haven't listened to it lately, don't worry. We're going to take you through it track by track. Stick around. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. All right, everybody, who's ready to rock out with their talk out there? Everybody is. I know that the Hawk is ready. He's already rocking out. So we are, you're back with the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. My name is Lou Lombardi, a.k.a. Ludini. We have the Full Power Trio in full regalia today, guys. We've got Keith the Hawk Hawkins. What's up, Hawk?
Hello.
How you been, brother? Hello.
I got something to tell you. I'm a poet now.
You are?
Yeah, and here's my poem for today. From New Orleans to Poughkeepsie, by the end of the show, I may be a little tipsy.
All right there, Hawk, the new poet, poet laureate of the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Over here and in the right corner, wearing the Mistress of the Dark t-shirt, the gorgeous scarf, and the hair with the purple highlights is Lily V6. What's up, Lily?
I'm sleepy.
What? You got to wake up.
I know, but I'm still recovering from the weekend, yo.
Would you like some more? I'm drinking English breakfast with Knob Creek in it.
Would
you
I
like some?
I guess I would nap if I did that. Okay. So.
You're drinking, what is that, a hot toddy?
Yeah, I told Lily before we started, I started getting into tea this week, and I'm really enjoying it, so. I said, I brought down the ice and everything, but I thought, I'm going to try doing a little tea with my boyfriend.
Were you into tea on Friday? Is that what you were drinking Friday?
I was teetotaling on Friday. So we had a really great week. Before we get into all that, though, let me give a shout out to Wolf's Customs. Wolf'sCustoms.online. Great job that they do, guys, with your musical instruments out there. They can take, no matter what you play, they can do an awesome custom finish on it, something that nobody else has. Even, you know, they're known for Hollow Flash, but even the Hollow Flash, each one is a little bit different, so no two are exactly alike. You get a really cool finish on the guitar that stands out, or your guitar, your bass, whatever, that stands out to really make you put on that great show, you know, by having an instrument that really gets people's attention. Not, you know, we want them to, you know, you want to make get the attention with your playing, of course, but by having a great guitar, it just takes it to the next level. Talk to Chris Thunderwolf Dotson at wolfscustoms.online. Shout out to Rock Rage Radio for carrying the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Those of you that listen on Rock Rage, don't be afraid to hit us up at lulombardirocks.com. You can get all kind of more information there as well. As Lily was mentioning, we had a big weekend.
We did.
And it was a big celebration with Lily. Lily is a jock on Rock Rage Radio, and she is 200 and some shows now, right?
200. It will be 200.
Okay, so
we celebrated it early. But
okay, so 200 shows with
by
Lily
the end of the year, it will be 200.
Awesome. And so we had a big rock festival for, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, 3 days of rock and metal. We had vendors there. We had bands, obviously. We had food. It was insane. I didn't sleep. Who needs to do that, apparently? But it was a lot of fun. Everybody did great, and I have to thank the Subalpine for hosting and everyone who helped out during the show and who came to the show and had fun, because I think we needed it, honestly.
It was a lot of fun and great fellowship with the other musicians. I want to give a shout out to Tim Doverspike, his band
Unbroken Soul.
His band, let me hold up the CD here for those who watch doing the video portion. Unbroken Soul, great. They did a great job, and Tim's just a cool guy. He's been a fan for a long time. We really enjoyed hanging out with him. It's a good record. You want to check it out, Unbroken Soul. And also, shout out to the band White Thrash. Those guys were a lot of fun. Just exactly what it sounds like. That's exactly.
They sounded amazing that night.
Yeah, the name of the band fits with their style of music in LA. Really good play. Very tight band. Front man. I do not get everybody's name, but their front man was put on a good show. It was funny as hell.
Damien.
Yeah, it was really cool. We had a good time. So those guys were awesome. Everybody was really cool. So yeah, thanks to everybody, and shout out to my band, Jared and Drew. Smooth Gooch. We had a really good time. It was our second show. We play one show annually. That's it. So the last show was at the Subalpine. This show is at the Subalpine. Right. About a year ago, November.
Yeah. About that. And so hopefully we'll do it again next year. And I want to just say to all the bands who did play, there will be photos. First Angel Media, Jonna and Josh both took photos. So those will be out soon. So we'll tag you or you can tag yourself.
Sweet. Hawk, how you doing, brother? What's going on in your life? Anything new other than being tipsy in Poughkeepsie?
No. I recorded some songs about 3 months ago for a guitar player that I play, you know, on occasion with. And he is a pretty decent songwriter. He writes a lot of, like, pop, a lot of country pop stuff. And one of his songs I recorded on got picked up by Warner Brother, like a Warner music label out of Nashville. So they're gonna like shop it around to some of their stable of artists. So I was on the drums on that song, so that makes me probably equivalent to maybe moving up to Florida one day.
Now, congratulations, man.
At the end of the day, that don't mean shit. They're just gonna re-record it anyway. So.
Well, dude, it's something, man. It's a pinky toe in the door. Let's put it.
I can say that I laid a foundation at a very brisk 78 beats per minute.
Do you think that? If now I know we're just kind of BSing before we get into the topic, but do you think that if the guy starts doing something and people are, you know, touring becomes a thing, maybe later on next year that you could be invited to, you know, participate in something like that, maybe doing on the road a little bit? Or
I doubt it, because the guy that wrote the song is not going to be actually singing the song. They're going to actually bought the rights to the song and they're basically going to shop it around to somebody that's actually on their. In their label.
I gotcha.
He's not on their label. He's just trying to do some publishing shit.
I gotcha. I gotcha.
Songwriting. So it was just cool to be on something that actually was heard by somebody that might actually know something.
Oh, cool. Excellent. So are you guys ready to talk about Stone Temple Pilots?
Sure.
Guys into that?
I don't
sort
see
of thing?
Why not. You know why? Because you know what I'm going to do? That's what I'm here to do, is talk about STP.
STP. Not the motor oil.
Right.
Speaking of that, it's got an oil change today, so this is so very unique.
Yes.
Right with it, hand in hand. The minivan got the oil change, and now I'm talking about STP. I don't think it was STP motor oil, though, so let's digress. Go ahead.
So, anyways, we're talking about the album Core. And, Lily, why don't you kind of just give us the sort of basic background of the album, just the sort of the quick overview.
Word. Core. Released September 29th, 1992. So I was around when this one was released. So I do remember when it came out. Was recorded in a matter of 5 weeks. The band decided to name it Core, referring to the apple of the biblical story, Adam and Eve. So yay. Certified 8x platinum by December 2001, making it the band's best-selling album of all time. It shows the band's attempt to revive the album-oriented music approach of the 1970s. I sort of agree. Doesn't sound like a grunge album to me because, you know, I don't like grunge. So I will disagree with anybody who says that. It had mixed reviews. We're going to talk about that later. You want to talk about that now?
Right. This is a sort of non-grunge album that came out during the grunge era and got unfairly judged, I think. My first sort of, I mean, I liked the record when it came out, but the first thing that this shocked me, I was watching Saturday Night Live, and David Spade made a joke about Stone Temple Pilots saying, yeah, I like this band better when they were called Pearl Jam. And I was like, what? In my mind, to my ears, the only song on the album that sounds like Pearl Jam is Plush. That's the only song in the album that I think kind of fits the sort of grunge, post-grunge kind of sound. I think the rest of it just is basically sounds like a good rock and roll
album. It's a little more
upbeat
than grunge, so I can't call it grunge.
They really had that rock and roll swagger of bands like Guns N' Roses or Led Zeppelin. They sort of had that thing going on. That the grunge bands sort of, you know, really kind of were trying to shy away from. They did songs like Sex Type Thing that, you know, sort of were a throwback to that kind of, I don't know the word, the correct word that I want for this. So I'll use a woke term with these sort of rapey lyrics that, you know, from you know, more like the, you know, the lyrics, if you read the lyrics, now Scott Weiland said it was more about, you know, criticizing that macho frame of mind, but really lyrically reads like a Motley Crue song.
Right. Well, one critic said that Sex Type Thing could be Mike Tyson's rape defense. transcribed into grunge rock.
In any case, so it is all killer, no filler, with the exception of one song. There's one song that I just think is BS. But we could talk about that a little bit later. Keith, you want to weigh in? Just are your overall thoughts?
Yeah, I think I'm going to discuss this, you know, in any sort of detail, but I think that this album is very good. I think that the band was from San Diego or Southern California area.
Yes.
So I think that record labels like to lump people in with what's already popular just to market it better. They had, from what I read, they had full creative freedom on this record, which goes to show you why some of the track listing's a little odd if you want radio airplay. But I mean, we'll get into that too. I do think that they are Led Zeppelin with Jim Morrison singing. That's what it sounds like to me.
Oh, yeah, he definitely had Jim Morrison feel.
Scott Weiland has a very Jim Morrison sort of, like, even Mark Bolan glam rock sort of, like, approach to things. If I've seen STP once, seen Velvet Revolver once, he definitely has, like, that, you know, kind of, he got a throwback kind of style when it comes to his stage presence. The DeLeo brothers are probably underrated as a, you know, songwriting duo. They're very good at what they do. I think Dean DeLeo has definitely a Jimmy Page crush. The band has a very Led Zeppelin-y kind of sound. They use a lot of cool chords and a lot of cool melodic things in their songs. I do think that this album, top to bottom, is pretty damn close to like a masterpiece. I've listened to it twice in the last 3 days, and I think that there's not a song that I really, other than a few of them, that just get too much radio airplay. I'm not saying they're bad songs. I'm simply saying that there's three or four singles off this record that have been overplayed. I mean, you know, which are pretty, you know, everybody knows those ones. But it's like, and they're great songs. But I think that a lot of the songs, the filler songs on this album, are actually the better songs. And I think that the more you listen to this record, the more it grows on you. And I want to give a tip of the hat to one of my favorite rock and roll producers, Brendan O'Brien, because this guy had his hands all over this. And you can tell that he just knows how to get a great sound. And for a personal note on this album, Eric Kretz, the drummer, plays GMS drums. When I heard this record, I had to have a GMS drum kit, so I saved my pennies and traded in two other drum sets and got a GMS kit.
Nice. I'm really glad that you mentioned Brendan O'Brien, Keith, because this is a huge part of this album, and I would like to kind of just go through a little bit of what Brendan O'Brien has worked on. And some of these records may be heard of.
Drops, yeah, this dude's he got crazy, crazy resume, man, but go ahead.
Drops of Jupiter by Train.
I love that song.
100% Fun by Matthew Sweet. Mirror Ball by Neil Young, which was Neil's sort of big kind of comeback during the grunge era. He worked with Pearl Jam. Jackal. Yeah,
they were the backing band on that album,
yep,
weren't they?
Yep, Jackal. The Jayhawks, Hollywood Town Hall. He mixed Temple of the Dog. He's a producer on King's X's Dog Man. Papa Roach, Love, Hate, Tragedy. Riot Act by Pearl Jam. Binaural by Pearl Jam. Yield by Pearl Jam. Evil Empire by Rage Against the Machine. Maybe you heard of that one. Super Unknown by Soundgarden. Maybe you heard of that one.
This is a freaking masterpiece.
And not necessarily the producer lines, but either mixed, produced, or engineered, sometimes doing all three. More recently...
Oh, I didn't even know he did Black Ice. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
More recently, he did Black Ice with AC/DC, Killswitch Engage, Seether, Holding On to Strings Better Left to Fray, The Killers, Battleborn, Rock or Bust from AC/DC. And I want to kind of mention this record that when we talked about disaster songs, this whole album is about a big disaster, which was 9/11, and that is The Rising by Bruce Springsteen. The whole album is kind of the soundtrack to that period in American history, and produced by Brendan O'Brien. So the guy, what? He's got a pretty good resume?
I'd say he's qualified.
And Keith, I got to tell you, I need you to comment real quick on this. That snare drum sound on Core is, I mean, it is very Bonham-esque. It is really amazing.
Yes, I mean,
amazing.
I think he's, I don't, you know, it's I never really read in depth of what he was doing, but I think he probably used, like most drummers do, they use several snare drums for that, but I mean, if he was playing the GMS drums, there could have been who knows how many snare drums being used. But I mean, the sound of that recording, the sound of that kit made me actually want to buy a GMS kit. And I think that that's still on to this day, and it still sounds great.
When I heard, we'll go through track by track here in a second, but when I heard Dead and Bloated and I heard that's bum, bum, when that kicks in with that snare, I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. But that is that very reminiscent, that drum sound. And it's Brendan O'Brien, you know, working with Gretz to get that sound, getting that Bonham-esque type thing. And that just drives that whole record. Anytime that snare hits, man, it just puts a giant smile on my face. It's amazing. So let's go through them. Let's go track by track, guys. And let's do it. Dead and Bloated. Keith, go ahead. Yo. Give us your thoughts first, bro.
Okay, so the first time I heard this song was actually when I seen Stone Cold Palace open for, of all bands, Megadeth, at the old Civic Arena. This band wasn't nothing when they come out. It was their first tour, and I was just happy to, like, I was there with some friends to see Megadeth in my metal years. So it was basically, who the hell is this band? They're not even a metal band. They're coming out. He came out, and he sang into a megaphone, "I am smelling like a rose," you know, and doing that whole thing, and the band just bursted into that big snare, that double snare hit into Dead and Blood, which was the first song on the record and the first song they did live. And he used that megaphone to get that effect, which I read he sang into the guitar pickup for that effect in the studio. But it's just one of them songs that's just straight ahead rocker. It's a kick-ass song, and it's a great way to start an album. I just love the whole like breakdown, and it just has a, he was, I guess him and Eric Kretz were in a, we read this whole, the same thing from Rolling Stone. They were in a coffee shop and just hanging out and like bouncing lyrical ideas off it, you know? So it's, you know, he had that, "I am smelling like a rose and somebody gave me on my birthday deathbed," whatever the hell else he says, and just goes from there. And the song is just a straight ahead rocker. I don't think there's any other song on that album that could go first. That one is just, that's duly, you know, it's where it should be in the pecking order of the song. So first is definitely Dead and Bloated. That's a good opening track because it just comes out and it definitely hits you like a sledgehammer.
To kind of do a little guitar nerd on everybody, live he did the mic megaphone, and I believe did they do that with Velvet Revolver? Did they play it? Because they did some Stone Temple Pilot songs with Velvet Revolver as well.
Yeah, I think he did it. He also did it on Cracker Man too.
Yeah,
you know,
but on the album, that's not what he's doing. That's Dean DeLeo's guitar cranked all the way up through a giant Marshall amp, and that's Scott singing into the guitar pickups. That's what gives it that sound that is absolutely amazing. I think that's a first. I don't even think the Beatles did that or Led Zeppelin did it. That is a total first and done by Stone Temple Pilots. It is just such a kick-ass song. Lily, you got any info on that you want to share?
I have a memory from it from X-Fest in 2000.
Sure.
As this song came on when they started performing, I was peed on by a drunk gentleman next to me in the lawn. So that's how I remember this song initially. So that sucks. However, Scott...
This is a Lily getting peed on song.
Was his name R. Kelly? Was it R. Kelly by any chance?
No, it was a skinny white dude. No.
Was the guy wasn't dead and bloated, was he?
He wasn't. He was drunk as shit.
He was drunk and bloated.
Drunk and pissy.
Yeah, so that's my fond memory.
He was bloated with piss. He had to let it
that's
out.
That's my fond memory of this song. But when I was reading some interviews with Scott, he said it wasn't really about anything, more about a vibe, because at that age he didn't have any life experience yet. So that's what I have on that.
Right.
But that's my beautiful memory of that song.
Insane riff, just heavy as all get out. And this is a really good example of how you can be sound heavy without being metal.
There's a few songs on this album that I think that
I think we should do
get that nod.
I think we should do a podcast on the heaviest bands that aren't metal.
That'd be fun.
Because that's future podcast. Let that stew around in your head a little bit. But yeah, Dead and Bloated opens the album. Absolutely amazing. What's the next song, Lily?
Sex Type Thing.
What?
Their debut single.
Never heard of it.
Of course you haven't. their video had tons of rotation on MTV. Scott Weiland wrote the lyrics after a girl he was dating was raped by three high school football players after a party. So I guess it is about rape.
Like I said, very rapey.
But it's an anti-rape statement, not a for-rape statement.
I think this confused some people, especially because the grunge era was all about, you know, rockers were now more sensitive.
And they weren't all,
you know, they
about
weren't all
the sex,
about,
drugs,
you know,
and
banging
well,
groupies
the drugs,
and stuff like
but
that.
Not the sex.
But, well, yeah, that was the perception. That was not the reality. Mm-hmm. Do you think these guys didn't get tons of tail? You're freaking stupid.
And when I was reading that article you sent, Dean DeLeo said the song In the Light by Led Zeppelin, which happens to be one of my favorite Led Zeppelin songs, had a direct influence on the main riff in this song. So I thought that was pretty cool because I had to go back and actually listen to both to find that.
He was gardening and he said he heard that song like coming from inside the house or from a car or something nearby. But he was hearing it wrong. It just happened to you, Keith. You hear a song, but you hear it wrong because you're not quite hearing it right, and it sounds like something else, and it kind of inspires you to come up with an idea. That's happened to me in the past, too. Yeah. And you go,
I heard a song today that was basically a slowed down, like, New Orleans version of For What It's Worth by Buffalo Springfield.
Yeah.
And that's the cool. chords, dude, the Tab Benoit, the guitar player.
Oh, yeah, I know who he is.
Yeah. And the chords to it sound like a slowed down version of all things Dirty Deeds by AC/DC.
Well, there you are. So it's sometimes that happens, but yeah, I did. Yeah, I read that. That was really interesting.
That was a really cool fact. This is usually the closer at the shows, and they did extend it for a few of the tours because Scott Weiland liked to get naked on stage, so he would strip naked to the extended version of the jam of this song and wrap the lower half of his body in an American flag in true rocker American fashion. I did have to ask a couple of the musicians this weekend not to get naked on the stage, so that's what reminded me of that, yes. But it's also been covered by Velvet Revolver, of course, Evanescence, Fuel, Papa Roach, Theory of a Dead Man, and Weird Al Yankovic used part of it in his The Alternative Polka song. So, good stuff.
Any comments on Sex Type Thing, Keith?
Yeah, I think the lyrics are, from what I read in that article, the Rolling Stone article, which is, you know, amazing that Rolling Stone actually wrote something useful. sometimes things aren't taken... You know, lyrics aren't taken the right way sometimes. You could probably do 10 podcasts on that. But I think this song was about, his surviving band member saying that he just didn't really like the way sometimes people, they're like men talk down to women, and he would sometimes almost pick fights with people in places. And he just didn't like women being talked down to. And the lyrics are taken probably out of context, but I mean, at first listen or 100th listen, I mean, sometimes it does sound the wrong way, but it's a catchy song. I think it's one of them songs that's overplayed, but I still think that it's a strong song, and it has that, like, it borders on that sort of, like, grunge, hard rock kind of vibe, and, definitely they were probably, casting some checks on that one, so.
Eric Kretz said, not everything is literal in reference to the lyrics. So
just that's kinda, pretty much it.
Yeah, keep that.
It.
Well,
put
you
that
have
in
those people that just.
Yeah,
do that,
yeah, yeah. There's people that can't wait to, you know, jump on something. So let's move right along, guys, because the next one, it was a song that is, this is like kind of very definitive song of theirs, Wicked Garden.
Yeah.
So what do you got, Lily?
It was one of their biggest hits, but it never had like a commercial single. It was just like a radio promo, which was kind of cool. Scott Weiland stated that Wicked Garden is a song about people allowing their innocence and purity to be lost in their lives. They did perform an acoustic version of Wicked Garden on MTV Unplugged in 93, which I had to go back and look at because I didn't see it at the time it came out. It is a fantastic version, though, so I do suggest going and see it. You can find it anywhere. And they also performed the song on The Late Show with David Letterman in 93 and in 2013 during the K-Rock Weenie Roast as the surprise superstar band of the evening.
Wow.
So yay, Weenie Roast. I do love this song. I said this might be my favorite, actually.
Yeah, it was an early song for the DeLeos. Robert and Dean were, just kind of a lick, kind of something he had that they had sort of floating around for a long time. By the way, before they were, little interesting fact, before they were Stone Temple Pilots, they were Mighty Joe Young.
And I was surprised to find out that Dean DeLeo was not the original guitar player.
Yeah, I read that too.
So, who was the original guitar player? You want to talk about that for a second?
I don't remember his name. Something Hickok, maybe Wild Bill. I don't know. It was a friend of Scott, Scott Weiland's, and he basically was, from what Dean DeLeo says, he was a good rhythm guitar player, but didn't have the proficiency to do. I think Corey. I'm paraphrasing here. He didn't have the proficiency to play lead, so they asked Dean to come in and do some lead work on a couple of the songs. And next thing you know, that kid's out of the band, and Dean's the guitar player. So,
well, it helped that his brother was in the band as well.
That don't hurt.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt. Do you guys know how Scott got into the band in the first place?
I don't.
He met Robert DeLeo at a Black Flag concert.
Huh.
Black Flag concert show.
Yeah.
In some shithole club. I can't remember where it was. And they were both bragging about their girlfriends to each other. And it turned out,
oh my God, it was the same girl.
They were dating the same girl.
That's great.
And if you guys need to get on my mailing list, because I sent this out in the email yesterday, and they had like a kind of like instead of it turning into a fist fight, it became a kind of like laugh and bonding experience between the two guys, and they became friends very quickly.
That's great.
Yeah. So over it. So that's how it got started. They were banging the same chick. Yes, I said banging the same chick. So Keith, you want to are we done with Wicked Garden? You want something else, or you have something else you want to talk about on Wicked Garden?
I think Wicked Garden is actually one of those songs that I think, I don't know if I'd call it a hit, though. I mean, it was like one of them songs where, they had, I think, some airplay with it. But, I mean, out of the big three on the Sect Type Thing, Plush and Creep, I mean, it's the Wicked Garden's probably the distant fourth. But it definitely has that commercial sensibility that I think, band try to capture in a good rock song, and I think it's a cool song. I think it listen to Eric Kretsch talk about it in the beginning. He does like a at the beginning and the end, he does like a little 80s nod to 80s drumming, and does a little like mini solo thing between the hits, and I think it's a cool song. It definitely has a cool riff, and definitely has a Stone Temple Pilots vibe to it, man. So
yeah, it's very melodic. I love
that. Yeah, some songs on this album, I think, just captured their sound.
The next song on the album is this very short little piece that they wrote as a kind of squeegee between, like, to get into Sin, which is a song afterwards. And it's just a little guitar ditty called No Memory. And there's not any, I don't really have anything on
the only thing that it was Scott and, Dean would, like, when they were living together, Dean would just, like, be jamming on the guitar, and they would, like, constantly be writing, like, these melancholy things, and they said, hey, great segue.
Yeah.
Pretty much is how that went.
That's all this. This is a segue into. You have any comments on No Memory, Keith?
Yeah, I think on the, in the article I read, Brendan O'Brien was like, we still need, like, a couple more, like, something to fill out the album a little bit more, and Dean DeLeo had this in his vault somewhere, we'll say, and he pulled it out. And they kind of worked on it for a while, and it's almost like that. It's like a prepping you for the next song.
Almost like it could be going to the second side if we still had
it's a very classic rock thing to do. If you think about it, this is a lot of things that like a lot of bands from the 70s did. There was always like a little interlude or something like that. It was a very common thing. So it's kind of a fun kind of throwback kind of vibe.
Yeah, it's definitely, and I'll probably say this, more than I want to tonight, but I just can't help myself. it's a very Jimmy Page thing. You know, it's kind of the Jimmy Page vibe to it.
Well, that's the first time you said it, and we're only 29 minutes into it, so you did pretty good.
Oh, that's pretty good. And I'm impressed with myself, not to mention the word. Every time I say the word Led Zeppelin or Jimmy Page, you at home must drink a shot.
Oh, boy.
Oh, Lord Jesus.
I guess we're going to die.
Okay, so the next one, as I hinted at, was Sin. You want to go ahead? Speaking of sin, Lily.
Obviously, this is all about me right now. Scott Weiland wrote the lyrics based on the bass player's, Rob DeLeo's band, bad relationships with women. It's said that many of Weiland's lyrics are obviously personal, but he also writes them about his bandmates as well. This this is obviously the one that's channeled through Rob. He said that Rob said in an interview that looking back on the song, it was Rush-inspired, which is appropriate because Alex Lifeson was one of his role models. So that's one of the band's favorite to play because they all love Rush anyway. And there it is.
Wow.
I mean, at the end of the day, who doesn't love Rush besides Lily?
Besides Lily.
Actually, I know a lot of people who don't like Rush.
Shame on them all. Wow. I think that I will concur with the fact that this is what I read also is one of their... Or was one of their favorite songs to play live. They liked this song that much where they would just love to play it live.
I can see that, though. That seems like a fun one to play. I mean, I don't play, but if I did.
My two cents on the song is that this is a step up from a lot of the songs on the record. I think it sounds more mature than a lot of the songs on the record. It has a very cool breakdown in it. It has energy, but it also has a lot of, it's melodic, it has great dynamics, and I think that this song this one could have been a radio smash, I think, but
we don't get to pick those.
That's just me.
It's kind of long. I think it's the longest track on the album, isn't this one? It's about 6 minutes.
No, Where the River Flows is like 8 minutes.
Is that longer? Okay. I want to read a quote from Eric Kretz about this song. When Atlantic Records A&R man Tom Carolyn came to see us at a really dingy club in Hollywood, we played it. I remember there were 30 people in there that night, maybe 20, and that's not the optimal night for an A&R chief from Atlantic Records to come see you. But we played it like it was the last day on earth. It was just like, we got to do this. We opened the show with Sin because I think we wrote it that day or maybe the day before at rehearsal. Scott didn't have any lyrics for it or anything. I think we just kind of did the intro for about 40 seconds as an opener, but it was something that we were proud of, and Tom loved it. So it was an instrumental in getting them the attention of Atlantic Records. So that just goes to show. And there's a great, I love what he says. He said, we played it like it was our last day on earth. That is, that's what you got to do, guys. I don't care if there's only 20 people in the audience. You got to play your music like it's the last day on earth, like it's the biggest show ever. Always throw your balls out there, right?
I don't have those, but okay.
That's how you got to do it, brother.
I've had many last days on earth.
Let's get to the next track. What is it? Naked?
Naked Sunday.
What?
Yep.
What's wrong with these guys?
Well, every Sunday's a Naked Sunday, right?
Wow. Every Sunday is a Keith, is every Sunday a Naked Sunday for you?
Hell no.
I guess that's just me. I'm alone in my principles.
Lily's having Lily. I guess we have a party at Lily's next Sunday. Huh?
Every Sunday, there's a party at Lily's.
I'm going to go home and write that hit song, I'm Alone in My Principles.
I hate you.
There you go.
I know what that's from.
That hit song, Alone in My Principles.
I know what that's from because I said it on purpose. That thing you do. Anyway, the song came very late in the process of the album. Started out as a rehearsal room jam. And... Rob said he was doing an R&B James Brown kind of thing on the bass. Scott was going for the flailing crazy Jim Morrison type guy that he loves to do because he really definitely channels him on stage and through his singing. And they wanted to be very tripped out vocally. It was a good energetic song, especially for the time of the 90s grunge kind of thing. I don't know. Is it actually about God? I keep seeing that plus other things. I don't know if it's actually about God, but everybody's saying,
I don't know. I read
God.
It was like Swaddling was going for that whole, like, you know, kind of preacher on a soapbox kind of thing. That's what he even said in that article, where he's just, because he even has that like preacher breakdown towards the end, and it has some energy. The song's definitely a rocker. It has that cool like drum intro, it has some effects on it, and it just comes in, and it's just it falls to the wall song. And what I say, art's up into it, art's, you know, in interpretation up to interpretation. It can mean whatever the hell you want it to mean.
I can't even ask Scott, so I don't know.
This is true.
So we don't even know. I didn't see anything on an interview with him with that song, so I couldn't tell you what he interpreted it as. So
the next song is the first like real ballad, maybe the only real ballad on the album. Plush is a kind of mid-tempo song, but this is really kind of the real ballad on the album, and it is Creep, which I still don't understand half the lyrics, but Creep was one of these like. And what signature songs of the 90s. What's so funny is there are two giant songs from the 90s called Creep.
Oh,
this
yeah.
one and the one by Radiohead.
Yeah, Radiohead. Yep.
So I just found, and I don't know who did whose was first. Was Radiohead?
What about the one from TLC?
Okay, that one doesn't even count.
was this song before the Radiohead song,
wow,
or was the Radiohead song?
I don't know. I think that it actually was, because I think Pablo Honey came out in 93, so, you know, you could double check that. But if this album came out in 92, it might have beat it by a year or so.
Or even a couple months, depending on the time it was released.
Yeah, this
so
was released in September, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, we're looking at it less than a year, we'll say. So I do think Pablo Honey came out in 93, and Creep was on that, so it's that's just my guess. All you smart people at home, let me know if I'm wrong.
That is, I'm going to let you get into this, Keith.
By the way, Led Zeppelin, Jimmy Page. Drink.
But Creep by Radiohead, they won't even play that song live. They hate that song. So, Keith, why don't you go ahead and talk about Creep for a second, since it's your favorite song in the album. I'm kidding. I don't know if it is.
I'm going to dog it. I think every band needs that slow, mellow song. I mean, to quote the dudes on the... You ever seen the movie The Stone Age? Every band needs that one pussy song. So, in that movie, it was Don't Fear the Reaper by B.O.C., but that's a whole other thing. But that song, I think, definitely has a... What Dean DeLeo would say has some, like, cowboy chords in it, and it's a... it's definitely a song that I think... probably got them to catch a lot of checks. I mean, it's radio, definitely radio friendly. Half the man I used to be kind of resonates with people, I'm sure. It's a song that I think is, did I say it was too overplayed? But I'll say it again, because it's a song that I think is a good radio friendly hook song that every band needs, and pretty much we'll leave it right there. I don't think it's a horrible song, but I think it's by far not the... It's probably one of them songs that eventually, if Scott Weiland was still alive, that he wouldn't want to do anymore, but I'm not him. Then again, he was a smackhead, so who knows?
He was a smackhead.
Who knows? He did it every show I went to, so.
There you go.
I think that I think it's a beautiful song. I think that the lyrics are very kind of mysterious, and I always sort of felt like I was in a kind of a David Lynch film. When I would hear the song, because of what are they talking about? Everybody run, Bobby's got a gun. Like, what's happening here? It has
nothing. That lyric was described in the Rolling Stone article as Scott wrote that about Robert moving to California at the age of 18 and living a lot of life in 5 years.
Maybe
actually being shot at. He said LOL, but I don't know if they had those little things that when this article was written, but you never know. He said that. He lived a lot of life from 18 to like 23, 24, and at three, you know, 4 or 5 years when he first moved to California, and Weiland just kind of went with that. So
I always sort of like pictured something out of the movie Lost Highway whenever I would hear this song. Yeah, but this was it's just got a great atmosphere to it. What I tried to do with it when I went back and listened to it was like. Try to listen to it with fresh ears and not go like, oh my God, this song or that song is so overplayed, because when it came out in 92, it was not overplayed. We hadn't heard it yet, and it was really mind-blowing. This is one of those records. I was in the band Petey Gets Around, and I had long drives to rehearsals in Indiana, and this was one of the CDs I always had in the car with me, listen to it either on the way there or on the way back, sometimes both, and just... absolutely loved it, but this song always really intrigued me, chills up and down the spine sort of thing. Lily, you got some
actually there is an interesting fun fact about this one. There are two music videos shot for Creep. One
what?
That was aired by, and I'm gonna say it wrong, Graham Joyce, the one we know, and the one that was shot and shelved by Gus Van Sant, and they will not show that one. I can't even find that one due to its drug and sexual references.
Oh, I got to see that.
Well, I didn't find it. I did only look briefly at work today, but I couldn't find it. So maybe you can find it somewhere. But
I bet you could probably find it on a torrent site. What I'd like to do is, if you can find it, send it to me.
Okay.
And then what I'll do, guys, if you subscribe to my mailing list, I'll send it to you.
But yeah, I thought that was interesting. I only could look briefly at work today, though, because people actually came into work today.
What? Imagine that.
How dare
people
they?
People coming into work.
They haven't come into work since March, but they'll come in today.
Just to bother you, Lily.
They do. Oh,
don't they know you have a podcast to prep for?
They actually do. They ask me about it every week.
An interesting fact about the DeLeo brothers, there was a time where they worked across the street from each other. Robert was working in a guitar shop, and Dean was working, I believe, for some sort of modeling agency. He was shuttling models back and forth to shoots.
Yeah, I read about that.
And this is one of the riffs that they worked on during that period. And if Dean would think of something, he would run across the street on it, like catch a break, run across the street and say, "Hey, Robert, get a guitar. We got to work this out real quick." So, and those of you that are not in bands or anything like that, this is a really exciting period for a band when you're doing your first record and you've got the right crew together and you've got the right guys, and you're kind of like, one of the comments that the guy said that the reason they knew that this was going to be good was because they were sort of like kind of getting each other off with the music. They were somebody would play something, they'd be so into it and they'd be really excited, and they kind of had that feeling that this is going to be really, really, really good. And that's really exciting. Those of you out there who are in music know exactly what I'm talking about. Those of you who aren't, well, that's how it is. That's how you have that excitement and you have that feeling that, like, something really good is going to happen here. And these guys had that making this. Go ahead, Keith. Keith,
I had that feeling constantly up until recently. Then the epidemic hit or the pandemic hit. And now I would turn in that feeling to play fucking Brown Eyed Girl for Tip Jar. And if I had to do that, that's good enough right now. You know, if I got to do Sweet Home Alabama, I'll take requests. It doesn't matter.
You'd probably
I remember those days of being in, like, original bands where people would make, they would get, you know, they'd make up riffs and they would show it to you or tape it and send it to you or give you a cassette, showing my age, a cassette of it, go write something to this. And that was, those were the days, man. That's pretty awesome.
Good stuff.
All right. They sat...
Bill Damiano said he'd already be dead if we did shots. I just wanted to throw that out there.
They did. This is recorded with them all sort of sitting in a circle. And for the most part, it's one take live in the studio. And how many bands do that today?
Oh, none, for
almost
sure.
Almost none. That's called being a freaking musician, kids. When this podcast is over, go home and practice. You're listening to Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. You want to get more information, please check us out at lulombardirocks.com. Shout out to our good friends at Wolf's Customs. Go to wolfscustoms.online. Get a custom paint job on your guitar. And thank you, Rock Rage Radio, for being our friend and playing the podcast for all your listeners. We do appreciate it. Piece of pie. Piece of pie. And the next song, Piece of Pie.
I have nothing to say about this song. Wow. I'm sorry. Other than I know it's songs. It's a combo of a couple earlier songs that were pieced together. One in particular was Only
Hence
Dying.
Hence the title, Piece of Pie.
That's all I got.
Bob Merson, Chris Thunderwolf Dodson, what's up? Chris says that you have old man pubes on your old man chin pubes.
Who said that?
Chris.
Thunderwolf.
You ain't right, son.
Funny
we
guy.
We talk about Piece of Pie.
So let's talk
about Piece of Pie. Let me tell you about Piece of Pie.
Tell us about Piece of Pie.
Has a freaking monster riff in it. Listen to it. This is one of the songs I think gets lost in the record. I'm listening to it again. Even they said when they cranked this up in the studio on some big ass speakers, they said this is what our music could sound like. This was, you know, a kind of a Frankenstein mishmash of some songs they had laying around and they kind of put them together. I really think this song is strong, man. This is probably one of the songs that could be lumped in with the grunge thing, but this is a really cool riff. It has a lot of attitude. It's heavy. It's got that, you know, it's a really good song. I mean, what else can I say? I don't think it's a filler song. I think this song would be up there for me. I would be like, all right, this song could make kids want to like probably smash into each other and break some heads and, you know, mosh it up a little bit. You know, these are, did some of these bands are, you know, like, once again, we could say that some of these bands are like borderline metal with some of these songs, you know?
This was a song written with their, or originally recorded with Corey Hickok, their original Scott's friend, who was the original guitar player. And, this is one of those times where they brought Dean to play, came in to play on it, and it was just painfully obvious that Dean was actually the right guitar player, even though Corey was Scott's friend, and it happens, guys, right? Anybody's out there who's been
if
in a band knows that.
There's
like,
a better person for
you've
you
got then. Somebody in the band, you go, like, it's not working out, and there's a guy waiting in the wings, and you just feel like an asshole, but you know, you got to do what's best for the music. Let's talk about Plush.
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 Second single from the album, Songs Chord Structure. The chord structure, which I know nothing about, but I liked reading about it, was, and I loved reading about all of DeLeo's stuff that he did with these songs, but it was because of his love of ragtime music. And apparently it was loosely based on a newspaper article Scott Weiland had read about a girl who had been found dead after having been kidnapped in the 1990s. Also a metaphor for a failed relationship, I guess. Number one on all kinds of lists. This is one of their biggest songs. They have spun this song 133,000 times in the decade of the 90s. That's how popular this song was.
And and there's a very well-received acoustic version of it, too. And this is one of those songs I think really kind of like begged for an acoustic version. Like,
MTV,
it made sense.
MTV Music Awards, where they win a Grammy for this, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that song, that unplugged version, MTV unplugged version of it, probably catapulted this song into getting that major radio airplay, because this song has been played so many freaking times. I think it is the perfect radio song. I mean, it's just got that, it's got a hook, the lyrics are cool, it's got that nice, you know, it's got some nice breaks in it.
I think this one could appeal to everyone.
Yeah, it's not heavy where it could, like, you know, be like, you know, intrusive to your, you know, your ears, like, oh shit, I don't want to hear that one no more. But it's got a cool guitar chords in it. I mean, that's, you know, I don't know what exactly chord he's playing. The chord's a little odd sounding.
Well,
but
what he's doing is, and it's really like, it's almost like kind of a jazz thing. He created, the way he voices the chords is they create a chromatic descending bass line. So it goes from G to F sharp to F to E to E flat.
Yeah, that's all.
Those aren't the chords he's playing, but those are the invert. He creates the bass line and then plays chords that work diatonically in the key that he's playing in, and it's brilliant. It's really a good, really a great piece of guitar music. It was something that when I taught lessons, we always worked on because you learn so much about chords and everything by learning that song. Really important song. just one of those great classic rock songs. It's a great guitar song. Definitely, if you're a guitar player, you're learning the guitar, learn that song. You'll get a lot out of it. We are getting low on time. So let's try to quickly, let's get through Wet My Bed.
Interesting song.
That wasn't a request, Lily.
I never wet my bed. Come on. This is where Scott is very Jim Morrison-like,
yes,
though.
This is a yes.
I don't even know how else to even describe that, but if you listen closely, you can hear them whispering in the background. They say something at the end of the song. You can even hear, if you listen super close, lighting cigarettes and the paper actually burning. That's how strange this song is. I don't even know how to... I don't know what else to say
about it. It's the only song on the album I could do without.
It's just
odd. I like them all, but this, like, I would, like, I listened to it a couple of times, and then usually on the CD, I would just skip to the
next
song.
Well, it's only 96 seconds, so, you know, you could tolerate.
I couldn't take it for 96 seconds.
It's definitely Jim Morrison Doors. It's owed to the Doors. I mean, his, you know, definite influence on, you know, him. But Jim Morrison is, you know, established in the song, even though it's a very quick song. It's definitely a filler, and it's one of them songs that just kind of just, it is what it is, man.
Cracker Man. Cracker Man, Cracker Man, does whatever a cracker can. That's
so I've read like 100 things about people saying this is about a drug dealer, but when I was reading that article, it said it was about a gentleman that they knew who was homeless called the Cracker Man, who he would talk, Scott Weiland would walk, get his breakfast every day, talk to the man, give him food, and this song's supposedly about this gentleman, so... It was spawned from that, seeing this guy every day for several months. I hope you know, nothing real bad happened to him. Probably did.
He's probably like a rich executive somewhere right now.
Rob said that this was another sort of piece together song, and they did some. He said they did some R&B with Little King Crimson Twist. So,
any comp? What do you have to say about Cracker Man?
I think it sounds like they're, you know, kind of their kind of bag. I mean, it's definitely them probably playing live in a room and just getting that. I don't hear any King Crimson in that. I don't hear any freaking, I mean, whatever they're saying. I don't hear any of that shit.
I mean, so, I took it from the band.
I mean, I know. I read the same thing. That's why when you said that, I'm like, I read the same thing. I don't hear any freaking King Crimson in that. It sounds like a straight ahead. It sounds more like a Ramones tune. It sounds like a straight ahead punk tune.
Yeah.
But it's another one that when I seen him live many moons ago, he was using the megaphone, and he probably did. I think they might have did a version of it with Velvet Revolver. I don't know. My ears were bleeding, so I don't remember. But it's just one of those things where I think I did read in the same article where it's that they even admitted they that was their sound. You know what I mean? That was what they were going for, and that's what they achieved. And it is about a homeless man, from what I understand, too.
And as Keith mentioned earlier, Where the River Goes is the longest track, over 8 minutes on the album. And Keith, while you're hitting it, why don't you talk a little bit about it?
Well, first, I think this song is once again a very Zeppelin-esque song. I think that if you listen to the drum intro is very John Bonham-ish. It's definitely Eric Kretz is definitely worshiping at the altar of Bonham with this intro. I think the melodic parts of the guitar, definitely Jimmy Page inspired, and I think that the song is a very good song, but I could see where, you know, it would never, it's way too freaking long to be a radio song, and it's pretty much where it belongs towards the end of the album. But then again, Atlantic Records wanted Plush to be their first single released, and they refused, so they put it ninth on purpose, from what I read too, just to make it buried in the record. So it's one of those things. But I think this song shows there's a maturity process going on in this record. It just in that one record, you can go from a song like Cracker Man where they're playing more simple, and then they write something like that. So I don't know what the, you know, where the whole like order of songs were written, but I mean, where the River Goes is a more mature sounding song to me, and it has a lot of cool melodic parts in it. But it, like I said, it being eight and some change, I mean, you're not going to get any play like that. But it's on the record, and it's the last song on the record.
And it's a great rock jam, dude.
It's a very good song.
I mean, it's excellent. Like, even though it's long, like, don't let that discourage you. You should check it out. Lily, you got anything you want to talk about?
Just
on this?
That also the name is very Zeppelin-ish, Where the River Goes, and it is where it belongs on the album. I don't think they could put that anywhere else, and people still be interested.
Yeah, you ain't gonna put that shit first and then be like, it's next.
It's like, all right, we're done here. So that's all I have.
Don't know. I don't know about that.
It's too long.
I don't know. Wouldn't bother me.
I mean, but this ain't the 1960s, Lou. Nobody's gonna let an 8 minute and some chain song be on the radio because no one has the attention.
I didn't say it was gonna be on the radio. I didn't say that, but
I think it's a good song, but people can barely get it through, you know, Shake It Off at this point.
This was the first song that they wrote with Dean when he joined the band.
That's why it's more mature sounding.
Very mature. So, yeah.
I just want to add that back to the reception of the album, because I didn't get to say it before, and I think it's interesting. They were voted both Rolling Stone's best new band by readers and worst new band by critics in the January 94 issue.
Yeah.
Same issue. Thought that was interesting.
Really funny.
Critics said no. Readers said, and go F yourself.
It's so funny. Like, how many times critics have been totally wrong.
Wrong.
I heard I listened to this. I follow this YouTube channel called Charisma on Command. And the guy today was talking about something that he says, every time some fad or something happens, it becomes insanely popular, and I think people are stupid for following it or getting into it, I realize that I'm the one who's stupid. Okay? And I think that it's really like a good kind of lesson, because if this is really grabbing a lot of people, and I'm not talking about something like Gangnam Style or something like that, that is a kind of a
That's
novelty
definitely a
thing.
Fad.
This is a whole album that, you know, a real rock band wrote and recorded and put their, you know, heart and soul into. to have it written off like that, I just think that, like, I think it was not what critics wanted to hear at the time. It was probably, they felt it was too much of a throwback.
They probably thought it was too similar to what was going
they
on.
They thought it was too much of a throwback. They didn't like the fact that it sounded like rock and roll. They felt that that was so over. Very Lester Bangs kind of attitude, right, Keith? Mm-hmm. You know Lester Bangs was? Do you remember in Almost Famous? Like, he was like, oh, Rock is dead.
You came along with the wrong time.
Yeah, that's what Lester Bangs on Rock was Dead in 1968.
well, clearly, he's a genius.
You know, but... And like I said, I told you that statement I heard like from Saturday Night Live when this record came on. I was really like, what? I remember hearing this record. And today, when you hear this record, it sounds completely at home right next to like you could play, they could play a, what? They could play an Alice in Chains song. And then you could sandwich this between Alice in Chains and Van Halen on a rock station. And it would fit perfect. You know, it doesn't sound like anything like, you know, it sounds just like a great rock album with like younger guys who were really excited about Led Zeppelin and the Doors and that kind of music. And they were like putting their kind of younger kind of spin on it. What do you think about that, Keith?
I think it's a great rock and roll record. I think it's our best record. They made some other ones that were good, but I think this one by far, 8 million copies and probably more than that, but 8 million ish copies they sold. Not too bad. I think that that's just by far is their best record to me, and I would take this shit over some Pearl Jam record any day.
Legit.
Yeah, I would too. And to compare them to Pearl Jam, I think is really.
I don't hate Pearl Jam, but I just think that they're uncreative.
It's not the same thing. Well, it's not the same thing at all. They're not doing.
Pearl Jam's boring to me.
As you can see, our next month's album will be a Pearl Jam album. I'm just kidding. Not. Nobody here in the room is a big Pearl Jam fan. And I don't
hate them. I just think that they're another band that
they're
probably
overrated.
STP's first record was the pinnacle of their career. I don't think they sucked after that. I just think they just never could. It's hard to duplicate that kind of masterpiece. And I think that Pearl Jam's first two records were good. I'm not saying they're great. They were good. But I think after that, they just regurgitated the same shit for, I don't know how many, they have like 20 friggin' albums at this point. I don't want to hear no more of them. They won't go away.
They're like cockroaches.
Yeah. You kill one and it comes back. The only thing cool about that band is Eddie Vedder's a big Cubs fan like me. That's all.
I want to give a weird. You guys been listening to Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Go if you haven't listened to Core in a long time. Go check it out. It's a great album. One more thing, I go before we wrap up today. I just want to give a shout out. It is Greg Lake's birthday. Happy birthday, English bassist, guitarist, singer, songwriter Greg Lake. Worked with King, Crimson, Emerson, Lake and Palmer. So we're so not worthy, dude.
Happy birthday, Greg. You're a badass.
WolfsCustoms.online. Check them out. And shout out to Rock Rage Radio. If you love what we do, please go to LouLombardiRocks.com. Get more information. Why have a mailing list and a Facebook group and all kind of cool stuff. So you guys can check that out there. Lily, you do a thing.
I do a thing. It's Hot Licks with Lily 6 Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern time. It is a radio show before anybody says anything else about it.
It's not her OnlyFans account.
It's not my OnlyFans. You have to message me later for that. However, I was supposed to go to Phil Lewis this Saturday. Guess that's not happening now. Postponed. So hopefully we'll figure out something to do this weekend.
Any interviews or anything on your show this week?
Nothing this week. Nope. Download the app for free. Go to rockrageradio.com.
Yeah. Check out rockrageradio.com. Get the app. Great rock 24/7. Keith, anything you want to add before we wrap up for today? My brother.
We ain't got time to rank them.
You want to rank them real quick? Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I thought my number one was Sin. I think Sin is a great song. I think it's a very mature song. And, you know, I did rank them, but, I mean, if we don't have time, then don't worry about it.
Do it. We got a minute.
Do it quick and dirty.
Okay. That's my favorite. Let me see.
Can't.
Wow.
All right. So number 12 was No Memory because I don't have no memory of that song anyway. Wet My Bed was 11 because that's really just her filler tunes. People might hate me for this. Number 10 was Creep because I just hear that shit too much. Number 9 was Sex Type Thing because I hear it too much. Number 8, actually, which I really like the song, but I just don't think it's as strong as the other ones I'm going to put. Dead and Bloated, which is a great leadoff song, is still number 8 on the record. That shows you how good the record is. Wicked Garden is number 7. I like the song, but like again, it's not as good as the rest of them. 6 is Cracker Man, because I think it captured what they sounded like. Listen to Vaseline, other songs that came after that, and you'll see. Number 5, Naked Sunday, got to slight the energy of the song. Number 4 is Plush. Even though it's not my favorite song on the record, I think it is a true commercial masterpiece. 3 is Piece of Pie, because I think that riff is just monster. 2 is Where the River Flows, because that shows you maturity as a band. And number 1 is Sin. So Sin and Where the River Flows are, to me, songs that are way miscast on this record, but I think are a killer. The fillers are the killers, my friend. And that's what I got to say. And that's my 2 cents. No change back.
I think it's a great list, Keith. And we had a little I'm not sure why we disagreed then over Where the River Goes. Because I said it could have been somewhere else on the album. You're like, hey, what do you want to hear that? So I'm a little shocked that you put that as your number 2.
It's just good where it is.
We were talking about the order of the album.
Okay. All right, I got you.
You couldn't have put it. We're not talking about the strength of the song. We didn't get into that. So if I misled you on that, Mr. LL, you need to know that I think the song is great, but I don't think that you could put an 8-minute and some change song into like the beginning of a album where you're trying to sell a record because nobody gives a shit.
All right.
You bury it towards the end like you would some really depressing song like Plush. Who the hell wants to hear that?
But you're missing out if you don't listen to the end, guys, because Where the River Goes is a great track.
Legit.
Despite grow an attention span. That's all I'm saying. Grow an attention span. Keith, thank you, my brother. It was good hanging out with you. Are we going to stick around, or are we cutting it short tonight?
I got a few minutes.
Hold on a minute.
Samantha, what are you doing?
All right, guys, we're going to rock out. Hey, guys, you take care. Have a great week. We'll catch you on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.